Hello there, this is Grigori Melnik and Fernanda Simonazzi from the Enterprise Library team. And today we're going to do the next demo in the series of presentations on the Enterprise Library Silverlight Integration Pack. So welcome, Fernanda, to the show.
Thanks.
And the theme for today is login, Silverlight login. So we are in flight right now. We've implemented several of the scenarios. There's still more work to do, but we thought we would give you a sneak peek into what's already been finished and what's included in the code drop 3 on CodePlex. So let's talk about the high-level login scenarios that we're addressing. Basically, the primary scenario here is that when you have a Silverlight app deployed and something happens, and then your user calls into tech support, and tech support needs to debug and troubleshoot the issue, and they really need to know why the Silverlight client is failing, and for that reason they may want to look into some log entry, so they may want to enable more of login to be done and then somehow get access to those logs. The secondary scenario that some of the developers communicated to us is to be able to provide an audit trace for the apps in regulated industries such as healthcare, though again you need to acknowledge that it's going to be rather challenging when you have unsecured clients to do that, but we are trying to address this one too. So the login application block existed in the Enterprise Library since V1, and it's one of the most popular blocks that we have. And the basic idea is that as this orthogonal concern of login is something that any enterprise developer needs to take care of, needs to add to their apps, you may not want to be writing your login plumbing yourself, and plus you do not want to pollute your application code with all the login code, login functionality. So with the login application block, you can decouple that login functionality from your business logic. And what's more, we provide a series of various destinations that you can route your log entries to, and there's a whole bunch of them in the box. And there's also extensibility points for you to build your own custom destinations. With the login application block for Silverlight, if you think about the destinations, the two categories here are local and through a web service somewhere on the server end there. So, and we'll again talk about this more. The other thing to mention here is that login application block will allow you to make some runtime changes to the way that login is performed. So one example that users ask us to provide implementation for is when they can turn the existing login severity up and down, or change destinations, reroute from one file to another, or maybe to a completely different category. So now, one thing we should mention is that the stack is pretty much the same in the Silverlight as it is in the desktop CLR. So, but we're adding new trace listeners, Silverlight specific trace listeners. So, there is a notification trace listener. There's also the isolated storage trace listener with a reading API, and again, we'll show you how those work. There's also going to be a file trace listener that allows you to persist your log entries directly without going to the ISO storage, but this is only for the out-of-the-browser scenarios. And there is this service trace listener that allows you to go through a web service and send your log entries somewhere and process them on the server side. So with the notification trace listener, that's the first one. The idea is pretty basic. The listener raises events, certain kind of events. You can register your components to handle those events, accordingly. And there could be different ways how you want to do that. You may want to do it through a status bar or some pop-up dialog or something like that. It's also useful for the login block diagnostics. You know, when the login errors occur and you want to have a log entry of that too. So why don't we switch to the demo and show how this can be accomplished?
Sure, in reality.
So this is a very simple application. It's really just driving the login API, but it shows a few of the features Gregory described. What this application, demo application, will allow us to do is to essentially log entries that have certain characteristics. Log entries usually have a message, a category which can default to a configure category, and a severity. We will make this just an error. And we are going to log it. This application actually logs two messages, and these messages somehow make it to the application. This is using the notification trace listener. It's really a glorified event, if you want, but since it goes through the login API, it's really a decision of the application and implementation detail to surface those entries that the application may have produced through the UI of the application. So we are going to show how we accomplish this in the code. First, we have a configuration file that describes how the login block is supposed to behave. It's pretty much the same as the configuration for the desktop, only that is expressed in XAML. But we have the main settings, in this case the default category, which is called default.
And I should also mention that in the final release, we're going to have the automatic conversion tool.
Yes.
That would, you know, you can still use configuration console if you like editing it, not through the XAML directly, but you want to do it in the Shiny config tool, and then through a wizard just convert this to a corresponding XAML file that you can include later in your Silverlight applications.
Exactly. So we have a set of trace listeners defined. Currently we are using the notification trace listener, under the name event, and we are saying that the default category, which happens to match the default name here, that will only show errors, uses this event trace listener as its destination. So when the application logs to the through this log writer object, which also exists in the desktop, it will the login stack with this given configuration will route the errors down to the notification trace listener, and the application will receive those. There are two questions to answer here: how we got a hold on the writer object, and how we could subscribe to those events. In this case, we just get it, the log writer, and this is possible because we are resolving this page through the Unity container, which has been pre-configured with the enterprise library options. This bootstrapping step is performed in here. This single line actually does a lot. The fact that we are asking for the current enterprise library container causes, if no such container has been defined, for a default Unity container to be instantiated, populated with all the information that describes the configured enterprise library of
all the objects from all the blocks, right?
From all the blocks, as defined in a configuration file, which by default is the configuration.xaml file. So in this simple line, we essentially primed the enterprise library container current with the configuration from the configuration.xaml without even.
And that was something that we introduced in V5, because before you could still go through the container, but you had to actually go and register each individual block as a separate extension, and it was cumbersome. Now it's just one line, and that's it.
Exactly. So now that we have a properly configured container, we ask it for the main page, mm-hmm. and because this is Unity and it supports the automatic or default injection, it will go and look for a log writer and it will just
resolve it for us.
So that's one part. The other part is how does this subscribe to the events.
Mm-hmm.
So the notification trace listener, as simple as it is, in fact is separated in two parts. The actual trace listener, which participates of the login stack, and this trace dispatcher object. This trace dispatcher object is an entry point to which you subscribe to events. And why we have this instead of the trace listener raising the events directly? The reason is that the trace listener names and the fact that there is a trace listener is really an implementation detail of the login stack. We want this higher level abstraction of traces that will be published to which you can subscribe or add a handle to the incoming events.
Makes sense. Mm-hmm.
This means that the traces from any notification trace listener will be channeled through this single instance, which is a singleton in a given container. So if you only care about a few of those or a subset of those entries, you will need to look into the arguments that you will receive for this event and filter out as appropriate the entries you get. But this simplifies the registration process. So as you can see, if you consider the main page to be kind of a shell, the application can produce or publish login entries, and the application decides to show those entries in an application specific way. In this way, in this case, it's showing them in a grid. So for now, we don't care about the other parameter yet, but that's really it, the notification trace listener.
Should we show where the log writing actually happens?
Oh, sure.
Do log, there we go.
So we are essentially invoking the write method on the log writer object. There are several overloads that you can use. We just happen to be using this particular one, but you can just provide a message if you want. You can
tons of different overloads. You can populate a log entry and then pass that object to. The important thing here, and that's why I actually asked you to show this part, is that people who are familiar with login lock, this is what they've been using all along.
Exactly.
There's nothing new about the way how you are utilizing the log writer. So very good. So let's move on and talk about now persisting log entries, right? So again, the whole idea now is that you want the log entries to survive your different client sessions, and also do potentially batch logging, and that's something that will be used for the service service trace listener 2. You'll see that, and several concerns that are addressed here with the persistent log. As you all know, the isolated storage is scarce, and we wanted to make it as efficient as possible size-wise, so we don't want to waste any of the space there. So there's also ways of defining policies and rules how to recycle that space and discard all the entries. And the other thing to notice here is that we don't expect users to actually go through the Explorer into the isolated storage directly and then finding those and then copying them or sending those files to the technical support. Instead, what we do, we provide a reading API that allows you to open and stream and basically read those entries, and then you as developers can decide how you want to build that into your client apps so that it would be easier to maintain and to troubleshoot your applications, whether you want to do it through some kind of a view and then, you know, menu item that invokes it and allows you to display it, or whether you decide to package it up and send it to a server, or whatever else you choose to do, you can do it through the Read API. So let's show this in a demo now. We'll use the same one, I presume.
Yes, it's the same application, and actually the configuration for this using the isolated storage trace listener was already in place. We had the isolated storage trace listener already defined, has a name and a fairly low size, so we can actually see it in action. And we have another non-default
category
that uses that trace listener. So if we use the isolated category name and log, we don't see it here, but if we choose this and show, this is using the read API Grigori mentioned, this isn't, although it looks like the notification trace listener, these are actually retrieved from the persistent storage rather than just managed by the application itself. And you can see that if we log again,
we should see four messages now, don't we?
Well, no. Well, yes, yes.
I mean, not messages, four entries.
Yeah. So these are the size of the repository is small enough to fit four entries if they don't have long messages. So if we do it yet again, we log, we should see that the two oldest ones are lost because we ran out of space, we had to recycle the space and
we dropped the old ones.
We dropped
and then
the old
we added the new
ones. So applications can size the isolated storage to balance the consumption of space and the chance of dropping entries that would have been useful.
Very nice.
So let's see what the application is doing to log and to show the entries.
So before you actually do that, let me just, since we were in that config file,
right.
Can we? I wanted just to mention one thing that, again, people who are familiar with the login blog, they would not be. They would not be surprised about this, but it is possible to in the trace listeners here. The whole idea is that you can actually add several different trace listeners, and you can have both the event notification and, let's say, the isolated storage trace listener, and possibly another one if you wish to. So that's another flexibility of the login block component that you can do this type of configuration. Good.
Yes. So what is the application doing? It's still logging through the same log writer using the same message as before.
The fact that
it goes to isolated storage is driven by configuration, not by the application code. The only thing the application is doing is to log to a different category, but that's the fact that that category name is mapped to isolated storage is really specified in configuration.
Yeah, it's external to the code. It's in the config.
Yes. So, what is it doing when we click the show entries?
Oh, so the read part, right?
Yes.
Okay.
It's getting an entries in isolated storage view instance and showing it. The reason we get it from the with an action is that we are really fancy using Unity here. We get the main window to be injected with a not the view itself, but a function that returns a view, and that will, when we get the value of that function, this is Unity specific, but when we get the value of that function, we will get from the container a new instance.
All the login entries there.
Well, we are just getting the dialog that is going to show the entry.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But if we see what the dialog is doing and how it is created, we are essentially saying that when we create a new instance of the view, we are going to inject a dependency to an isolated storage log entry repository. This is the object that implements the read API we were talking about. In this case, we want the one named test. We are using attributes. You could use any mechanism to configure the Unity container to wire up this view to the proper instance.
And that would be probably something that on the physical, in the Azure storage itself, that would be the name of the file, right?
Somehow. Yes, but that's really an implementation detail. Yeah. What's important is that that name matches the name of the repository used by the trace listener.
I see. Mm-hmm.
So the container, when it learns how to resolve the enterprise library objects, one of the hints it will get is that it should know how to resolve this repository object. And what it does, this is a child window, so it behaves as a dialogue. What it does when it loads is to get all the entries from the repository and essentially store them in a collection that will be bound to the data grid.
So let's show what other methods are there on the repository other than
Yeah, currently it only has retrieve and add. Mm-hmm.
But we're looking for feedback in case if you think that we're missing something here and that you'd like something else to be added to the read API.
Yes, we probably have a clear or reset method. Mm-hmm. But currently you can query whether it's available. It won't be available if, say, there is another instance of the application running that already has a hold on the repository. So mm-hmm. it won't be possible to have both instances of the application running at the same time. So that's really it. If we go back to the API, the application will continue writing using the same mechanisms, and it will be up to the configuration to determine which trace listener to use.
Very nice. So before we move on, the part where we wanted to mention the filters. Can we just do that quickly? Filters allow you to determine, you know, which levels of severity you want to log through. There you go.
Yes. In this case, we are only interested in errors, at least for these two categories. So when we log, if we happen to choose
something of less,
that is less than error. We can see that nothing happens, but if we make it an error, then it will be displayed or received by the subscribers of this particular trace listener.
So it's still going to go through that trace listener.
Yep.
Very nice. All right, let's move on. All right, so the next feature of the login block that also exists in the desktop version is tracing. And on the server side, you probably do know quite a bit of that, I would imagine. So, but we also added that to the clients. When you have really sophisticated Silverlight clients, this could help you with debugging your applications. And essentially, tracing allows you to correlate log entries to a specific activity or unit of work. And the way it does it is through the unique activity IDs that can be added. You can also get the elapsed time, how long the specific activity took. And one other thing to note is that if you were to do nest and tracing operation, then the context information will be inherited as well. So, and all of that would be consolidated. So let's get back to the demo. Tracing.
Okay, so let's say we have the application, we have been logging for a while, and if the application is interesting enough, there will probably be a lot of entries that might be saying the same thing, but they apply to different occurrences or units of work of
threads.
Or threads. So how can we tell them apart? Let's make a minor change to the UI so we can see more. The entries that you log have an additional property that is called the activity ID. This activity ID can be used to correlate entries from different units of work, but it's not set by default. You could write to the event to the writer log entries that are pre-configured with an activity ID if you want it. But if you're using tracing, that will be managed for you.
That's done for you automatically.
Yeah. So if instead of logging we log with tracing, this took a while because I had some delay to show the stopwatch functionality. What we can see here is that we have the two entries we usually have, but they have an activity ID,
which is a GUID.
Yes, and we have start and end messages telling us when the operation started and how long it took. We cannot really see it here, but the message continues. And you can see that there's this new sum operation category that is the only category on the start and stop message, but that is added to the intended category or the category specified by the application for the entries that the application is logging. So this allows you to define the boundaries of an operation, a logical operation, using this identifier. This is defined by the application in a way that makes sense to the application to determine which boundaries are interesting to separate. And we have the activity ID that in this case is defined by the system. So if we log with tracing again,
we should see a different ID.
We will see the same operation because this is the same code executing, but we will see a different activity ID. Now, this activity ID is, unless you supply it, is created by the system. But if your application already defines its own concept of uniqueness, maybe it's using some application-specific GUID to for some other reason, then you can reuse your activity IDs and provide your own. So how does this work in the application? So it's really simple, and this is the concept of the tracer object is available on the desktop. For Silverlight, we have a convenience mechanism to start tracing, rather than doing new tracer and providing the writer that it should be.
So there's no trace with. Manager?
And we don't have the trace manager in the Silverlight version, but you can ask the writer to start the trace operation.
So this is simpler, actually.
This is much simpler.
Yeah.
So this is the identifier, the logical operation ID. This is what makes sense for the application.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to provide your own activity IDs, which are used to identify a specific instance of that operation, you can do it.
Yeah. It's so you can just apply that there. Okay.
And then you can see that the application doesn't really do any different when it logs. This is happening on the method this is calling, but it could also be happening several layers down in code that doesn't really know that it's being part of this
mm-hmm.
tracing operation. So the API for writing is still the same. The write operation will just happen to capture this context information that is thread specific. So if you have several threads tracing, each thread which will get its own context, and the entries from each thread will have different activities.
So it basically it augments that log source, and where you have the log category, it will add also the
yes.
the name of the,
yeah,
of the operation.
And if you have
while the rest is pretty much intact.
Yep.
All you do is just you wrap it with the using and the start trace with the name of the operation. The rest is your unit of work, and
exactly.
nothing else is changing.
Exactly.
Really.
And when the tracer object is disposed, then the end message is sent to the log writer.
Mm-hmm.
So if we use another. So if we log with tracing,
now we see that our context got deconsolidated.
Exactly. We have identified a category for main, but let's...
Yeah. I like that, because we can actually, show how the login block, logs its own errors.
Yes.
So this is actually good. So we didn't plan to show this, but we're showing now. So, and in this case, you're just getting the... what happens is that the login errors are sent through the default category, and the default category defined here was using the notification trace listener. That's why we're seeing it here.
So let's, if we wanted to
make it work
the way it was expected, we will define a new category for main.
There you go. There we go.
So now
that's what we wanted at the beginning. Okay, very nice.
We have the start of the main activity. We have the start of the nested activity. We have the entries logged. And then we have the stop messages. And this, the nesting doesn't have to be one-to-one. A tracing operation can start a new sub-operation, end it, start another sub-operation, end it. So it's really a tree, if you think about it.
Very nice. So it's a pretty powerful mechanism when you need help in debugging your apps. Very good. So there are a couple more things for us to mention here. We've done the demo. In fact, that was the last demo for today. But we do want to mention the service trace listener. So it's more like a teaser here. We don't have it in Drop 3 yet, but here's how we're envisioning how it will be implemented and what you'll get when we finish the next sprint. So in the basic scenario, the server trace listener will allow you to send log entries to a service implementation through a WebCF endpoint. Here you can see that the client logs through the login application block for Silverlight, and then the service implementation can do whatever it wants. We will provide a default implementation here that effectively uses the login block, but now on the server, with all the familiar ways how you can log with all different syncs and the variety of the trace listeners, such as file, rolling, flat file, database, MSMQ, what have you. But of course, you can change that. You can replace it with your own implementation. In a more sophisticated scenario, you would also have batch login supported, where effectively login block on the client would write log entries to the ISA storage and then push them as batches to the service implementation. And this would also support the disconnected scenarios, and we're envisioning when the app restarts, the login block, if you configure it to be using batch login, would check whether there's any of the log entries from the previous session stored in the ISA storage, and then it would push them to the service once the connection is available, once that service is available.
Right? Yeah, and it's also important to note that while we will provide a default implementation, developers can create their own implementations of the login service interface if it makes sense for them, like if they want to log directly to a database or use another mechanism. Yeah.
By no means you need to be married to the login block on both sides. It's a convenience if you're already using it, but if you choose to do it through some other means on the server, you'll be able to do that. Just to sum up, what we showed you today is the progress we've made on porting the login application block to Silverlight. You've seen the notification trace listener as well as the isolated storage trace listener. We also talked about the tracing features that is built into login application block already, and mentioned the service trace listener that's coming in the future. Call to action for you. Please try it out. The code is available on CodePlex. The demo is available on CodePlex. The video is available as well. Send your comments through the discussion forum, or please email me directly. On that note, thank you very much. stay tuned for more. Bye-bye.